The scripture reading today is taken from Exodus chapter 13, verses 17 to chapter 14, verse 31. When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country, though that was shorter. For God said, if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by the desert road toward the Red Sea. The Israelites went up out of Egypt, ready for battle. Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, because Joseph had made the Israelites swear an oath. He had said, God will surely come to your aid, and then you must carry my bones up with you from this place. After leaving Succoth, they camped at Etham, on the edge of the desert. By day, the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night, in a pillar of fire to give them light, so that they could travel by day or night. Neither the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar of fire by night left its place in front of the people. Then the Lord said to Moses, tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp near Pi Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea. They are to camp by the sea, directly opposite Baal Zephon. Pharaoh will think, the Israelites are wandering around the land in confusion, hemmed in by the desert. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them. But I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army. And the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. So the Israelites did this. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds about them and said, what have we done? We have let the Israelites go and have lost their services. So he had his chariot made ready and took his army with him. He took 600 of his best chariots, along with all the other chariots of Egypt, with officers over all of them. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so that he pursued the Israelites who were marching out boldly. The Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them as they camped by the sea near Pi Hahiroth, opposite Baal Zephon. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to this desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. Moses answered the people, do not be afraid. Stand firm and you will see the deliverance of the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. Then the Lord said to Moses, why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Raise your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea to divide the water so that the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground. I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them. And I will gain glory through Pharaoh and all his army, through his chariots and his horsemen. The Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I gain glory through Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen. Then the angel of God, who had been traveling in front of Israel's army, withdrew and went behind them. The pillar of cloud also moved from in front and stood behind them, coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel. Throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness to the one side and light to the other side. So neither went near the other all night long. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all that night the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. The waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground, with a wall of water on their right and on their left. The Egyptians pursued them, and all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and horsemen followed them into the sea. During the last watch of the night, the Lord looked down from the pillar of fire and cloud at the Egyptian army and threw it into confusion. He jammed the wheels of their chariots so that they had difficulty driving. And the Egyptians said, "Let's get away from the Israelites. The Lord is fighting for them against Egypt." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea so that the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and their chariots and horsemen." Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak, the sea went back to its place. The Egyptians were fleeing toward it, and the Lord swept them into the sea. The water flowed back and covered the chariots and the horsemen. The entire army of Pharaoh that had followed the Israelites into the sea, not one of them survived. But the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground, with a wall of water on their right and on their left. That day, the Lord saved Israel from the hands of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore. And when the Israelites saw the mighty hand of the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in Moses, his servant. This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you so much, June. I know that was a longer one, but I felt it was important to go through the whole story that we're going to be covering today as well. Well, good morning, everyone. It's really nice to be back with you again after a couple weeks in Ontario. I was visiting my family and went to the cottage for a little bit, but it's nice to be back in BC as well. So this morning, we are starting another sermon series around the theme of the Exodus story. But we're not going to spend our whole time in the Old Testament with this. But each sermon will in some way touch on this story, the Exodus story, the Red Sea crossing, and it will look at how it helped to shape the people of Israel, the church throughout history, and us today as well. So this morning, we're going to look at the original story. The crossing of the Red Sea sets the stage for how this story has then shown up throughout history. In other weeks, we'll look a bit more at kind of the wilderness, what that means for us, and also the theme of waiting, learning to trust God in seasons where maybe the story doesn't feel true anymore. So the invitation for us in this series will be to allow the Exodus narrative to shape how we understand God and how we understand ourselves as well. So if you reflect back on your own life, what stories would you say have shaped you and your view of the world? When I was a teenager, I have to admit that my view of the world was shaped quite a bit by romantic comedies. I watched a lot of them, and they really began to shape my imagination. These stories taught me, probably unhelpfully, what a relationship should look like. I was also shaped by the adventure stories I read as a child, from Treasure Island to Lord of the Rings. The quest of Frodo to bring the ring to Mordor made me not want to settle for the mundane. I wanted to be part of doing something that would make a difference. When I relocated to France for a few years, I wonder if it was partly in search of this kind of story, this kind of adventure. Stories can shape how we live and how we view the world and our place in it as well. As societies, we also have shared stories. These are sometimes called iconic narratives. These are stories that you recognize when you hear them, and you know what they mean just when they're mentioned. If someone mentions David and Goliath, for example, you know it's a story about the triumph of the underdog. Romeo and Juliet, it's about forbidden love or ill-fated love. Rags-to-riches stories often feel iconic, origin stories as well. I think the concept of the American dream is something that continues to shape people's imaginations and expectation. Shared narratives can play a role in connecting us with others who have the same view of things. And this way, they can shape us as a culture. Some people might even say that a culture is a people who share the same stories. Now, the story that we're looking at this morning is one of the most iconic narratives there is, not just for us, but for the people of Israel and for the church throughout history. The journey of the Israelites crossing the Red Sea helped to form them as a people, and it taught them about who their God was and what he was like. In the New Testament, we actually see a lot of references to this story in the ministry of Jesus and his work as being a sort of new Exodus. And for the church, the journey of the Israelites through the wilderness has sometimes been used as a model of what it means for us to follow God today. So this morning, we're going to take a look at this Exodus story and ask ourselves, what about this event formed Israel as a people? And what did they learn about their God that they would remember, that they would carry forward with them? So let's step back into Exodus, to chapter 13 together. Now, even if you haven't read the whole story, I'm sure you know it from many movies that have been made about it. But I'm going to give you a quick recap to get you up to speed of where we find ourselves this morning. So the people of Israel had been slaves in the land of Egypt for generations now, and they had cried out to their God to rescue them with seemingly no answer for years. Until one day, God appears to a man named Moses while he was working as a shepherd. God appears to him in a burning bush, and he tells him, "Go to the Egyptian Pharaoh with this demand, 'Let my people go.'" And God promises that Moses will be successful because God himself will go with him. And the proof that what I'm telling you is true, God says, is that when the people have been freed, you will worship me here on this mountain altogether. You'll see that my words are true when the rescue does take place. So there's an invitation to Moses here to lean into trusting God, to take him at his word. So after a bit of wrestling, Moses goes and he tells Pharaoh what God said, "Let my people go." And as you might expect, Pharaoh says no. He has no invitation, intention of giving up his free labor. So God sends this series of plagues. Frogs invade the land, the Nile turns to blood, and finally all the firstborn sons in that land die overnight. And after all of this, Pharaoh gives in and says, "Fine, take your belongings and leave." It was during the night when the people were finally set free, along with all their possessions, their flocks and their herds. 600,000 men, in addition to women and children. So it must have been at least double this, right? 1.2 million people, a mass exodus, all heading out of Egypt by night. And in the midst of the chaos of the departure, you might have noticed this detail as we were reading it this morning. Moses makes the point of making sure to bring the bones of their forefather Joseph with them. Now, why did that matter? Well, a few hundred years before this time, when the people of Israel had first arrived in Egypt, the patriarch Joseph had made them swear an oath that they would bring his body with them when they left Egypt. Because, he said, God will surely come to your aid, and then you must carry my bones up from this place. So this action shows Moses' confidence that the time has come. This is it, thinks Moses. It's happening now. Taking Joseph's bones was a symbol of the real hope that they would be able to bury him in a new land. Now, God doesn't lead them the fastest way through Philistine country, but by the desert road to the Sea of Reeds, which is often translated the Red Sea. If they were faced with war, God thinks, they may lose courage and turn back. And so the Israelites begin their journey guided by a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. Visible evidence that God, Yahweh, himself is with them, just as he had promised Moses. And this was very much a sea of people, 1.2 million. This is roughly the population of Vancouver, Surrey, and Richmond all put together, all moving out from Egypt, a mass displacement. The Lord directs Moses to make them camp by the shores of the sea. And the reason that we're told is this is to set a trap for Pharaoh, who would assume that they had nowhere to escape to. Taking the bait, Pharaoh finally goes again after his former slaves. He takes his chariots and his army, his horsemen and troops, and follows them to where they're camped by the sea. Try to picture the scene here. It was the end of the day, and the Israelites have just made camp for the night. In the dark, you can see all these pinpricks of light as meals are being made, children being put to bed. I'm sure they're exhausted from the day's journey. And suddenly, someone sounds the alarm. The Egyptian army is coming with all their horses and chariots and are closing in fast. For the Israelites trapped on the shores of the sea, there's nowhere to go. So chaos erupts in the camp, terror. And they say to Moses, "Is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the desert?" To be honest, I can't blame them, right? They had stepped out in faith to follow this leader, against all odds, we might say, and they're met with a seemingly hopeless situation. Remember that this generation had grown up in slavery. They had known nothing but slavery up until now. They had been born into it in Egypt. It's who they were. It's what they knew. They would eventually need to take on a new identity, a new way of being in the world. I wonder if they had forgotten what this God of their forefathers was like during those centuries in slavery. That was the distant past, right? Egypt was a world power. How could they have thought they had any hope of escape? But Moses answers the people in their fear. "Do not be afraid. Stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You only need to be still." In the midst of all this panic and chaos, Moses speaks, "Do not be afraid," he says. "God will fight on your behalf." And so they watch as the Egyptian army gets closer and closer. They don't know it yet, but this Exodus event would become a defining part of their identity as a people, an iconic narrative, we might say. This was the moment they went from being slaves to free people, from being lost to becoming a people belonging to God. And their role at this moment was simply to trust, to be still. They're invited to choose to trust the one who is with them. Faith sometimes looks like stepping out, and it sometimes looks like being still, like standing firm. For the people of Israel, what was about to happen next would become a collective memory of what God can do and what he will do, something they could look back on later when they struggled to trust. I wonder if you have stories from your own life that help you to trust God today when you're going through a difficult circumstance. One memory that comes to mind with me was a few years ago. It was when I was finishing up my theological studies at Regent College. Now, for most of my degree, I had been working part-time while studying, but I felt I needed to focus on this program full-time to get it finished. I had been doing student ministry at the time for the decade prior to that, and it felt like a huge risk to quit my job and to spend money on studies. But after prayer and chatting with my family, I took out a student loan for the year and signed up for my courses. Now, without my even asking them, a number of my supporters, when I had been with student ministry, decided that they wanted to give money towards my studies. And through this, and along with a scholarship, I paid back that full loan straight away after the year. And this felt like such a confirmation to me that God was with me, and that he could provide if he called me to something, even when I didn't know where the provision would come from. And although it seems like a small thing, I find like stories like this in my life become an anchor for me as I face seasons of uncertainty in the future. God is with me, and I'm invited to trust him. I wonder if you have stories like this that come to mind as well. Back to the shores of the Red Sea. So the Israelites are panicking now as the army comes closer and closer, thinking this is the end. And Moses brings their complaint to God. And the Lord responds, "Why do you cry out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on." And God gives these instructions: "Lift up your staff and extend your hand towards the sea and divide it, so that the Israelites may go through the middle of the sea on dry ground. And as for me, I'm going to harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will come after them, and I may be honored because of Pharaoh and his army and his chariots and his horsemen. And the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I have gained my honor because of Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen." And the angel of God, who is in the pillar of fire, moves to the far side of the Israelite camp to stand between them and the approaching army. And Moses lifts up his hand towards the sea, and God brings a strong east wind to drive the sea apart. All night long, we read, the wind blows, turning the sea into dry land and dividing the water. Now, something that's important to know is that in the ancient world, the sea is not a neutral thing as it is today. It represented uncontrollable chaos. It was something that could not be tamed. So in this action of splitting the sea, the Lord shows himself to Egypt and Israel as the one who rules over even the chaos of the sea. Nothing is beyond his authority. And this was significant for a people living at this time in history. We also see echoes of the creation account from Genesis in this story. God again separating the waters to make dry ground appear. And this is hinting that there is an act of creation going on here as well. God is forming a new people. And so 1.2 million people, torches lit against the dark, walk through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and on their left. Now, each step of that journey must have felt like an act of trust, don't you think? Needing to have faith with each footstep. Was it safe? Would the water crash back at any moment? And as they walk through, the Egyptian army follows them. But God throws the army into confusion and jams the wheels of the chariots. When all the people had crossed, Moses turns and once again stretches out his arm, and the waters go back to where they were. A return of chaos, a reversal of creation in a way, the destruction of the Egyptian army. We read, when the Israelites saw the mighty hand of the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in Moses, his servant. So this is the moment they go from fearing the Egyptians to fearing God, from panic to trust. And this is what begins to define them as a people. Now, I think it's worth our pausing here for a moment. This is a tricky story, isn't it? Because what was a victory to Israel was certainly a tragedy for the people of Egypt, wasn't it? Many who we might assume were simply following orders. What do we do with this tension? I found it interesting looking into this, and Jewish tradition actually wrestles with this problem. There's a story told in the Talmud which describes the scene in this way. It's a commentary on this story. It goes like this: as the sea closes over the Egyptian army, the angels in heaven burst into song, along with the people of Israel who are on the shore. But God stops them and says, "My creatures are drowning in the sea, and you want to sing praises." I think this commentary reflects an understanding of a God who cares for his creation, who cared for the Egyptians as well. It recognizes that there is a deep grief that also goes along with this rescue. And to be honest, I find it hard to know how to resolve this. It's not as clean cut as we'd like it to be, is it? But I think the tension itself is worth mentioning. And still, the people sing, because they had been rescued from centuries of slavery and oppression. What follows is a song by Moses' sister Miriam describing the rescue. Songs like this cemented this story into the minds of the people of Israel, passing it on from generation to generation, establishing it as an iconic narrative. And I think there's an invitation to us in this today, an invitation to remember to remember. To remember who is at work in our stories as well, and the difference this makes. For the people of Israel, this story shaped their view of the world and of their God. And it's a story that continues to help us to understand what it means to be the people of God today. The Red Sea story is often compared in church history by theologians to conversion and baptism. Maybe you've heard this comparison before. The image of moving from death to life through the water, and doing so as part of a faith community, gaining a shared identity as the people of God, and a shared calling to reflect God's kingdom in our world. And this rescue also foreshadows God rescuing us from a type of slavery as well, rescuing us from an inability to say no to sin, to live differently than the patterns of our world. Jesus brings us through the waters of baptism to a new life with him as a free people, and as we put our trust in him. But this will be a story for another week. So Miriam continues her song, "In your unfailing love, you will lead the people you have redeemed. In your strength, you will guide them to your holy dwelling." We are part of this same story too. We have also been redeemed by God, and our participation in this story unites us as a people, as the church. So then, what stories would you say have shaped you? What narratives help you to make sense of your life and teach you what God is like? Are they ones worth holding on to? Do they reflect truth about God and the world? Are there other stories that might be more worth remembering? For the people of Israel, this became the story, not one option among many, but a defining memory that they then carried with them into the wilderness, into the promised land, and into each generation that followed. And it wasn't a story about what they accomplished, but about what God did. Centuries later, there's this story in the Gospels where Jesus is out on a boat with his disciples and a storm is stirred up. He is asked by his terrified followers in the midst of the wind and the waves, "Teacher, don't you care if we die?" You can hear the echoes of the fear of the Israelites on the shores of that Red Sea years ago, hemmed in. And Jesus' response to them again here is also to be still, and he stretches out his hand to calm the storm. It's an invitation for his people, his followers, to continue to trust their God. And this invitation is for us today as well. We all have stories that shape us, whether romantic comedies, adventure stories, family histories. Just as shared iconic narratives might help shape a whole culture, so our shared story of God's work in the world can help to form us as a church and teach us what it looks like to live as the people of God today. Let me pray for us. Lord, thank you that we live within a larger story that you have written, a story of redemption. Thank you for the ways that you are at work in each of our lives as well. Would you give us stories to hold on to that remind us of who you are? Amen.